Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from March 10th, 1999.
From the high desert in the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening or a good morning, wherever you may be across this great land, virus commercially from the Tahitian and Hawaiian Islands out west, eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south in South America, north all the way to the pole and worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM and I guess beyond. And worldwide, thanks to Broadcast.com and, of course, Intel at the moment, as we continue our experiment in streaming video. Streaming video, or is it screaming video? Listen, you can go up to my website and you can get the G2 software free of charge. Won't cost you a red cent. Won't cost you an American cent either. And then come back and click on streaming video, and here I will be dancing about doing my show, and you can both see and hear what goes on. Now, Richard C. Hoagland, good news to report, at least tentative good news. Richard did make it through surgery, and we're going to have to watch Richard very carefully for the next, 48 hours or so. But he did make it through surgery, I repeat. And I haven't had a lot of communication from the people in Miami. My guess is, I've had a little bit, my guess is that they're all pretty whipped. And once he got through surgery and was no doubt totally conked out, they all took the opportunity to go get a little bit of sleep. But I did get word that he made it through the surgery, so thank you all. I guess we can at least tentatively, cautiously conclude grand experiment number 7 worked. Or at least it's not an obvious failure. Richard lives. So I want to thank all of you from the bottom of my heart who participated in the effort. You never know. I guess you can call these things as you will, but we have now done 7 experiments. And all 7 have come up winners. Now, I don't know. I guess you could calculate the odds of that one with regard to rain or ET showing themselves or people recovering from insurmountable difficulties, certainly the case with Danyon, and a good helping hand with Richard. So I don't know. You know, what do you conclude about many minds concentrating in a single effort? I have not yet concluded anything except that I'm leaning heavily toward believing that it actually works. Listen next hour. You're in for a treat. Peter Novak will be here. And he claims to have solved the oldest mystery of them all, the secret of death itself. And he has written a book called The Division of Consciousness. The Division of Consciousness. And he will explain, I guess, the nature of what he believes consciousness to be, and in its understanding, unriddles the mystery of death. We'll see. Next hour, Peter Novak. Right now, a little bit of an update. First, NASA has got to go up and fix the Hubble. There's more Hubble trouble. Now, I hadn't heard that, but let me read the story to you as is and see what you think of it. NASA will launch an emergency repair mission this fall to the Hubble Space Telescope, which is in danger of shutting down. NASA decided Wednesday to move up the Hubble visit to October from June of 2000. Although the $2 billion telescope would be safe in orbit, NASA does not want to risk losing any valuable science time. Huh. What's wrong with Hubble? I hadn't heard Hubble was in trouble. But apparently it is again. You don't suppose it could be related to Y2K, do you? Now, again, although they say the $2 billion telescope would be safe in orbit, NASA doesn't want to lose any valuable science time. See, that would lead a slightly suspicious person to believe that it might be a software thing. Maybe an embedded chip up there circling the Earth? Who knows? Secretary of State Madeleine Albright urges Congress to delay votes on Kosovo until peace talks are completed, suggesting the warring sides would interpret a lack of U.S. resolve as, quote, a green light to resume fighting, but the House Speaker has rejected her appeal and scheduled a debate for tomorrow on a resolution on the possible deployment of U.S. troops. Now, I wonder why they would do that. Seems to me not to be a brilliant idea to deploy U.S. troops until they're sure they've got some kind of agreement. Otherwise, we're sending our guys into the middle of a hot zone. Maybe that's what they're going to do. Here's what I call a head shaker. A man down in Louisiana walked into a church, in the middle of a church service, and opened fire as he walked down the aisle, killing two people, wounding four others. Minister said the gunman's wife and baby were killed. He also reportedly shot and killed his mother-in-law before going to church. Incident occurred at New St. John Fellowship Baptist Church in Gonzales, 20 miles east of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Parish deputies there shaking their head. They have no idea why this occurred. Great. Into church, right down the aisle with a gun blazing away. This is really, really interesting what I've got here. It is from Gene. And Gene sent me email saying roughly the following. Art, I sent a message to SOHO, you know, the people with the satellite that watches the sun, asking them about the probability of a super flare, flashback to last night, super flare hitting Earth, and what it would do if it did. And I got an amazingly uncommunicative response, which I have quoted below. So, here's what she wrote to the people at SOHO. CNN reported recently that other star-like stars have been seen expelling super flares. How likely is it that the sun might send a super flare our way, and what exactly would be the consequences? Now, this is sent to SOHO, right? And so, you can see the trail of email once Gene's letter got to SOHO. It reached first a man named Steele, that's S-T-E-E-L-E, Steele, who said, Steele, can you take this one? Thanks. And you can see that it was kicked, thanks Gene, and Gene kicked it over to somebody else. And finally, it's hard to discern who sent this. Now, the answer that came back to my emailer was the technical answer she got back from the SOHO people was on the possibility of a major flare. Are you ready? Quote, to quote Paul McCartney, tomorrow may rain, so I'll follow the sun. End quote. Gene writes, as you can see, my message got bumped from scientist to scientist, who would normally answer questions, and finally to their PI guy, SOHO media specialist. The PR guy then proceeded to just throw me a cryptic McCartney quote, no mention of the chances or the possible outcome, as I had asked. This, to me, expresses an attempt to hide something. Can the PR guy really answer my question about supernova flares better than the scientists? Yeah, right. So again, a serious inquiry made of the people at SOHO kicked past several of the scientists there. Finally, with a answer, tomorrow may rain, so follow the sun. Yeah, all right. I mentioned this the other morning, but I didn't give it much play because I just didn't have time the other morning. On Tuesday, last week, this is in the Knight Ridder newspapers, a dangerous asteroid whizzed by Earth in a cosmic close call. Similar near misses are expected March 18th, March 26th, and April 1st. Astronomers are discovering killer asteroids at a record pace. Now, they've already added 55, by the way, this year, more than any other 6 years combined. Anyway, it goes back to what I've always said about this. The really close calls that we get are never seen until after the fact. In other words, they never run a story saying Earth is about to have a close call. Tomorrow or the next day, something is going to come whizzing by and it's going to be really close, folks, but no cigar. Or can't you do that cigar thing anymore? I don't know. We never get a notification ahead of time. Always, we just had a close call. And here's an interesting story from Philadelphia, the Inquirer there. The Philadelphia Inquirer, a very well-respected paper. Deformed calves, discolored crops, purple pigs dying by the hundreds, then decomposing quickly. Sounds like the X-Files, doesn't it? It isn't some Old Testament pestilence. It's here and now, and a mystery that has driven one farmer in western Montgomery County out of business and has others in the area scared for theirs and for their health. Now, thus far, the long series of reported problems first noted in the early 1990s has absolutely confounded environmental and agricultural officials. The EPA did its most recent round of soil and water testing on the farms in January. More tests to come. But, quote, the data we got back thus far does not indicate any kind of environmental or human health emergency out here. We're looking at what needs to be done from here on out. And apparently it's not exactly isolated either throughout the Mid-Atlantic region, according to Lynn Campbell, an EPA spokesperson. Farm animals are dying, and we don't know why. Going to make any kind of connection we can try to figure out what's going on here. Everybody is very tight-lipped on the story, but I trust the Philadelphia Inquirer is following the story, and we'll get some kind of update on it. Pretty weird stuff, huh? The priest was preparing a man for his long day's journey into night. Must be a hard job for priests, you know, going to people who are dying. You ever think about that? That's what Danyan does, too. Whispering firmly, our priest said, denounce the devil, son. Let him know how little you think of his evil. The dying man was silent. The priest repeated his order. The dying man still said nothing. The priest then asked, why do you refuse to denounce the devil and his evil? A moment goes by, and the dying man replies, well, until I know exactly where I'm heading, I don't think I ought to aggravate anybody. One more here that I can do tonight, now that I feel a little better, considering Richard made it through. Now, don't stop. He continues to need great assistance in the next 48 hours. You know, they're going to be watching Richard very carefully. And they are, of course, tentative hours after you have come out of surgery. So for those of you who have been thinking good thoughts, don't stop, please. But I thought you should hear this. A few months ago, there was an opening in the CIA for an assassin. The highly classified positions are rather hard to fill, as you might imagine, and there's a lot of testing and background checking involved before you can even be considered for anything like that. After sending many, many applicants through the background checks and the training, testing, they finally narrowed the possible choices down to two men and one woman, but only one position was available. So two were to be disappointed? Anyway, the day came for the final test to see which of those final qualifying persons would get the extremely secretive job. The CIA man administering the test took one of the men aside and handed him a gun. He said, quote, "We must know that you will follow your instructions no matter the circumstances," end quote. He explained, pointing to a door, and said, "Inside that room, you'll find your wife sitting in a chair. Take this gun and kill her." The man got a shocked look on his face, as you can imagine, said, "You can't be serious. I could never, never shoot my own wife." "Well," said the CIA fellow, "you're not the person for this job." And he was disqualified and sent home. The CIA man took the second fellow aside, handed him the gun, and told him precisely the same thing. The man looked a bit shocked, but took the gun and went in the room. Everything was quiet for about 5 minutes. Then the door opened. The man came out with tears in his eyes. "I tried to shoot her," he said, "but just couldn't pull the trigger. I couldn't shoot my own wife. I guess I'm not the right guy for this job." "No," said the CIA man, you just don't have what it takes. Take your wife and go home, son." Now we finally get down to the woman. He hands her the gun, tells her the same thing, except, of course, it's her husband sitting in the chair in the room. The woman, candidate three, takes the gun and opens the door. Before the doors have even closed, comes the sound of gunfire. Tremendous gunfire. The door closed and the gunfire continues. Shot after shot after shot. 13 shots fired in total. Then all hell broke loose in the room. The CIA man heard screaming, crashing, banging on the walls, things hitting the floor. And this went on for several minutes, and then everything went quiet. The door opens then, slowly, and there stands the woman, final candidate. She wipes the sweat off her brow and says, "You guys didn't tell me the gun was loaded with blanks. I had to beat him to death with a chair." I think we'll break here, and we'll be back with open lines through the top of the hour. I'm Art Bell. Stay right there.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 10th, 1999.
Thank you.
listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 10, 1999.
Again, for those of you who might not have heard or tuned in late, Richard Hoagland has made it through surgery alive and needs to be watched carefully by the people at the hospital, the doctors, and you. So let us not let up in our well wishes mentally for Richard in grand experiment number 7. But that's the good news, folks. He's through the surgery and still with us. They'll be watching him very carefully, as they always do in these cases, over the next 48 hours or so. Maybe before you know it, we'll have Richard here telling us all about it. And just one more little item before we go to the phones and open lines. Spring Hill, Tennessee. Ever get so mad at your car that you just shoot it?
Gee, I would never consider such things.
Actually, I've considered shooting computers. Anyway, a guy in Spring Hill, Tennessee did. Police say Boyd Kelly's car just died on him Saturday night. So, he blasted it right there in the middle of the highway. Pulled out an AK-47 assault rifle and emptied three 30-round clips into the poor 88 Oldsmobile, now departed. A sheriff's dispatcher says that several people called to report the bizarre scene of this man firing round after round into the tortured body of this Oldsmobile. And Kelly, of course, is now charged with a weapons violation. But the Olds, the Olds is wherever Olds go. Again, a question about the possibility of a flare. A Steel Hill SOHO media specialist, NASA Goddard Space Flight Center, replied to my emailer, to quote Paul McCartney, tomorrow may rain, so I'll follow the sun. I'm not going to get over that one for a while. One more little car story, and then off we go. A Knoxville, Tennessee. Where was that other story from? It was from Spring Hill, Tennessee. Hey, what's going on in Tennessee anyway with you people? Listen to this. Knoxville, Tennessee. Honk if you say I do. There's a man in Tennessee. We just, of course, read about one who shot his car. Three clips in a AK-47 into the Oldsmobile. Anyway, there's another man in Tennessee who wants to marry his car. We apparently feel about our cars the way we do about our women, huh? This guy actually wants to marry his car. Buster Mitchell says that he has been brokenhearted and hung out to dry, so he figured he might as well marry his only other true love, his 1996 Mustang GT. He calls it doing the good old boy thing. He's going to have to settle for a driver's license because officials in Knoxville say only men and women could get marriage licenses. It was sometime after he listed his fiancée's birthplace as Detroit, her father as Henry Ford, and her blood type as 10W40 that his plans began to sputter. Mitchell, though, is not giving up. He plans to try at a couple of wedding chapels in the Great Smoky Mountains. Her birth... Oh, boy. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Oh, we just missed him. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello there, Art.
Oh, it's Fritz. Hi, Fritz.
That's right. At least some good news about Richard.
Yes, yes.
We're all concerned. Now, we all know he's a man on the go constantly. And the question also arises, and when did he have his last medical checkup?
That I can't answer, Fritz.
Of course not. Yeah. Does he have yearly checkups? Guys like this usually on the go never have.
Probably not. He's a serious type A person, as you well know.
So age...
A plus, even.
Age and stress finally caught up with him.
Yep.
And so I'm sure he will, from now on, take his life a little different direction. Of course, we all miss him, and I hope he's going to get well soon. But that was a warning signal.
I think stress, absolutely, Fritz, is a big part of it. It's stressful. What Richard does, no doubt about it, is stressful.
We all know the work he has accomplished, and even if he's in the gray area, there's nobody out there that can match his ability. Regardless, the people will poke fun at him, but, I mean, we need guys like him because what today is science fiction is reality tomorrow, and he has broken grounds in many areas.
Well, Fritz, most recently, of course, if it had not been for Richard, there would now be concrete where something in excess of 2,000 years of age is now being preserved.
I hope that will sink in on America.
I hope it will, too. Thanks, Fritz.
Take care.
See you later. East of the Rockies, you are upon the air. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Better than yesterday, which is always a good sign. Turn your radio off, please.
All right, yeah, just took care of that.
That's good.
How are you tonight?
Pretty well. Right. What is your name?
My name is True.
True?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm from New York.
True in New York. All right, that's right.
I actually had three questions of interest that I was going to see if you could just throw me quick answers to. You could even pick one that you just find most interesting.
Well, give them to me one at a time.
Yeah. Okay. I was going to ask you, what do you think of the connections of the holy books of really all philosophy of religion and them maybe being like a primitive form of alien contact to humans? And also,
well, now wait a minute. What do I think of the various holy books?
Yes, that are written?
For example, the Quran and
correct.
The Bible and so on. I think that all are as likely to carry you to an ultimate path on the other side as another. In other words, I don't necessarily favor one above the other. I think they all may take you to the same good place if that's where you're going to go.
Of course. I mean, I was actually speaking more in terms of an actual alien to human transfer of knowledge, almost. Like, because I've heard from people that I've talked with, they have perspectives on it. Like, they look at it as maybe it was a way for a higher species of thinking, of thought, you know, to leave messages for us how to live, but yet it couldn't be handed to them, you know, handed to us just blatantly open. It was like knowledge to be gained.
I tend to think of a single source, sir, interpreted here as multiple sources, but the message is the same.
Mm.
That's what I think, yeah.
Oh, all right, definitely.
All right, second question?
The 33rd degree Masons and their connection with satanic worship.
I have no comment on that. Third question?
Oh, okay. George Bush, what do you think of George Bush and the other, I don't know if you've heard about the committee he got together that wants to go to Egypt for 2000, and also the connections that Egypt has with the book, you know, the Book of Revelation.
I'm afraid that's like your second question, sir.
Mm.
I appreciate your call, though. Thank you very much. See answer to second question. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Thank you, Art, for taking my call.
You bet. Where are you?
This is Noreen from nearby Buffalo, New York.
All right.
And I listen to you faithfully on WBEN.
Yes, ma'am.
9:30 on your AM dial. And Bert, a friend of mine, is the one who recommended you to me a year and a half ago.
Do you thank her now or curse her?
Pardon me?
I said, do you thank her now or curse her?
I thank her because... if I hadn't met her, I wouldn't have been listening to the program that you have, and thank you for having this program.
You're very
now,
welcome.
Now, I need to tell you something so that hopefully you'll ask a question of Ed Dames when he comes on this Friday.
Yes.
Okay, shortly after 2 o'clock this afternoon, I was waiting for the bank to set the checkout line in the car. I noticed the cloud in the sky. It was too exact to... I mean, clouds are vaguely defined shapes, but this was too well-defined to be a cloud. And so I kept saying all afternoon to my partner, there's something wrong about this whole thing. I had strange vibes all afternoon.
Do you think it was a contrail?
Oh, you're reading my mind.
Oh, no. Listen, I should have told Keith, too. Keith, I've booked William Thomas for next Wednesday night, Thursday morning. Wednesday night, William Thomas... He's coming back. This contrail story is so hot, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's just absolutely on fire.
I've seen the X in the sky.
Yeah.
I was wondering, you know, I listened, when I first listened to the first contrail program, it didn't ring a bell with me until the part about the webby stuff. And I was in the middle of my yard a couple of times. I thought, there's no web spider that could possibly weave a web this big. And then when I heard that you read a fax from Buffalo, New York, you know, and the rest is history, and today is like history.
Yep.
I'm getting horrible.
Let me tell you something. Even Linda Moulton Howe is beginning to take notice. She called me yesterday about the contrail story, and I'm putting her in touch with William Thomas, but people are beginning to jump up to this one. So we'll see, and we're going to be following up. I will ask Ed Dames. In fact, Ed, if you're out there, if you can do any quick work, it's a tall order, Ed, if you're listening, but I would really like to know if there is anything that you would have to say about this whole contrail business. I'd love to know that, Ed. Now, this is one of those stories that has taken on a life of its own. Also, just about everybody I know right now has the flu or a cold. And there are these suspicious phone numbers they're giving out. Programs that will give you free treatment in return for answering survey questions about your flu-like conditions. Weird, weird, weird stuff. On the international line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, my name's Dean. I'm from Toronto.
Dean in Toronto. Boy, do we have an echo. Hold on, Dean. Let me correct that. I think that should do it. Hi, Dean.
Hi. I'm from Toronto, and two things I want to mention. Did you get my package with the photos of the skull on the grave, on the bell grave?
Oh, no. On what grave?
I took photos of the painted skull I had and put it on a bell grave and sent it to you. I thought that might interest you. I guess you didn't get the package.
On a bell grave?
Yeah, I found
so my name is Bell,
a grave marker with Bell on it. Anyway, it's just an idea I had to send off to you. I guess think it's
something to cheer
anyway,
me up, I guess.
About 2 weeks ago, I saw what I tried to identify. I called up Hydro and the natural gas company here, and I saw what looked like a rocket taking off, and it lit up all the sky.
In Toronto. Do they launch rockets from Toronto?
Pardon?
I said, do they launch rockets from?
No, they don't.
They don't.
It was to me. It looked like a beam, a green beam, and it was off on the horizon. And I phoned up all sorts of authorities to find out what they could identify it as.
And
they can't figure out anything.
Well, I appreciate the report. Maybe we'll get some others. I'm not sure how you would confuse a green beam with a launch. Launches are really specific. How do you identify a launch? Well, for example, when they occurred at Vandenberg, you will see a quickly rising rocket with a tail, a plume behind it. And then if done around a sunrise or a sunset, you will see this, or even after, this really cool twisty kind of curlicue thing that might give you pause for a moment until you realize it is a launch. They leave pretty typical trademarks as they ascend. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Good evening, Eric. This is Rick from Issaquah, Washington. Listen to you on KOMO.
Thank you, Rick. Welcome.
The reason why I called is a couple reasons. I first started listening to your show about 6-7 years ago, and one of the primary reasons was because of Richard Hoagland, and he was talking about the crystalline structures on the moon.
On the moon, yes.
Very, very fascinating show. Just wanted to give my best to him. And a couple questions. Wondering if about 2 years ago, on April 1st, I believe it was, there was a gentleman that was flying in a small Cessna airplane.
Actually, that was April 2nd.
April 2nd.
Everybody says it was an April Fool's joke. Well, I have no idea. The answer is I have absolutely no idea what happened to him. Now, what we heard clearly indicated that he was shot down over Area 51, or at least that's certainly what I drew from it. And unfortunately, there's nobody you can call about something like that. There's no Area 51 phone number.
Yeah.
Because they don't even admit it exists. And if you call Nellis, they don't admit it exists. So calling an official to ask about a place that doesn't exist and a plane going down in it doesn't get you anywhere.
you didn't have a girlfriend or something that was going to call you and get in touch with you or something?
She did get in touch with me. She never got back in touch with me.
Oh, I see.
So, I have no way to follow up.
Wow. One of the things that Richard Hoagland, he was in Seattle about 4 or 5 months ago, and he brought that STS-80 tape.
Oh, yeah?
And the amazing thing about that tape was the pieces of debris or the UFOs, whatever they were, that were station-keeping with the space shuttle. And that was, they didn't kind of show that on that television program that was on a couple weeks ago.
The STS-80 video is going to send anybody scratching their head, walking away. Now, there's no way you can look at what was on that video and not know that you saw a weapons test of some kind or a vehicle leaving Earth at a real clip.
And then the objects, one thing that I noticed was that they would, as Richard Hoagland would call it, station keep. They'd move into your frame of vision and then stop and fly with the space shuttle, same speed, same distance. And only things that can do that are intelligently operated aircraft.
Look, if you really want a thrill, try and get hold of the entire STS-80 video. And what you've really got to do to put the whole thing in perspective is watch the entire thing. It goes on, about 20 minutes or so. And from that, you get a feel of what NASA is doing intentionally and what they're not doing when they're just sort of letting the cameras capture whatever might be out there, you know, pulled back. So you've got a wide angle view. And then the obviously, specifically zooming in expectation of something to occur in a very small area. And then, of course, it occurs. So whatever was going to happen, they were aware it was going to happen. It's really interesting. International Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. How are you?
Okay. Where are you?
I'm calling from Winnipeg, Canada here.
Winnipeg, yes, sir.
You betcha. Here's what happened. Earlier today, driving home from work, just before dusk, and it's a cloudy, hazy day with a high ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And out of the corner of my eye, out of the window of my vehicle, I see a flash. And as I look up, I see what I can only best describe as a white ball of, for lack of a better term, to compare it to something, it looks like a brilliant light bulb with green color in it, flying at an incredible clip. I've never seen anything fly as fast as this.
Isn't that interesting? Did you hear the call from Toronto?
I did, and he was talking about some sort of
green
laser.
Beam. Yeah, that's right, that's right. And what you are now talking about sounds at least somewhat similar. In other words, the way two people might perceive a single event.
Right. Now, you know, trying to dismiss any other options here, I don't know how to... I don't know what to describe it as, other than that, as I did, but trying to figure out what I saw today, it obviously was not an airplane. It was a big ball of fire. But what I'm wondering is it possible that a meteor could enter our atmosphere?
Of course it's possible. How far is Winnipeg from Toronto?
Oh, geez. Mileage-wise, I don't know, but it's at least 1,000 miles.
1,000 miles.
Yeah.
Now, that alone says something. Of course, it could have been a meteor, and that's what the scientists always say it is, a meteor. But on the other hand, it might not be either. They just always call it that, because it's easy on the ear, right?
There's a port on a western bay, and it serves 100 ships a day. Lonely sailors pass the time away and talk about their
home. This is for yesterday's Brandy.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 10th, 1999.
She serves them whiskey and wine. The sailors say, Brandy, wears a braided chain made of finest silver from the north of Spain. A locket that bears the name of a man named Brandy Love.
smell or touch the something inside that we need so much. The sight of a touch or the scent of a sand or the strength of an oak roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. Or to fly to the sun without burning a wing. To lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. To have all these things in our memories all. And to use them to come.
Networks presents Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired March 10, 1999.
The good news? Richard Hoagland is through surgery and still with us. The next 48 hours bear careful watching, of course. But the surgery is over and Richard is still here. Thank you. I have nothing more to say, but thank you. And don't let up. The next 48 hours, of course, are always fairly critical. A simple question just faxed to me, which the title of it is Simple Question. Are you or are you not a Freemason? Yes or no will do. Okay? Yes or no? That's what you get. Now, look, there's no point in denying that I'm a Freemason because nobody believes it, A, and B, it would remove what little light Bill Cooper has. So the answer is yes or no. We're going to talk about consciousness here in a moment. Again, just one more time, because this blew me away, probably more than anything else that happened during the day, other than the good news about Richard. For those of you joining at this hour, this lady, this very nice lady, Jean, after hearing our show about solar flares yesterday and noting that CNN had a report, sent a fax off to the SOHO people. You know, the people at SOHO, NASA Goddard Space Flight Center, and she sent them an email and she simply said, CNN reported yesterday that other stars have been seen expelling super flares. How likely is it the sun, she says, will send a super flare our way, and what would the consequences be? Now, you would think of that as a fairly legit, honest science question, right? Well, the people at SOHO took it, and you can look at the trail of email here going from one scientist to another with comments like, I wouldn't do a good job with this one, maybe Terry or Barbara. And each one of them doesn't comment until finally at the end, it gets to a SOHO media specialist, and the only answer our lady gets back to her question is, to quote Paul McCartney, tomorrow may rain, so I'll follow the sun. That's what our lady got, and he was a little blown away by it. Tomorrow may rain, so I'll follow the sun. Peter Novak may have solved the oldest mystery of all, the secret of death itself. Peter had never had a personal afterlife experience, never has, had no memories of any past life incarnation, no encounters with ghosts, apparitions, angelic beings, or demonic spirits, not even a single near-death experience. Nor does he claim to see, hear, or otherwise communicate with the dead. people who do have such experiences, Novak is quick to point out, tend to be powerfully prejudiced in favor of the specific form of their own afterlife experience, often at the expense of discounting contradictory reports of quite different experiences. Now that in itself would be a show. After studying psychology at Purdue University, Novak spent 6 years as a psychiatric counselor in a small Midwestern hospital, all the while becoming increasingly impressed with how fundamentally relevant the division of consciousness seemed to be to human culture. How profoundly this division seemed to impact, even mold, human experience by the end of 6 years. He was convinced that no other challenge the human race faces can equal the interior challenge of the disassociation and alienation between conscious and unconscious that exists in the human psyche. All other problems, he suspects, were but symptoms of the first and greatest problem.
Ooh.
Devastated by the tragic death of his wife, Novak walked away from his clinical duties, setting himself on an ambitious but seemingly rather futile quest to decisively determine and understand the true nature of death. Yes, I could understand that. Despite the world's many different and seemingly contradictory reports about death and the afterlife, Novak suspected that a single, simple truth lay hidden behind all. And he resolved to find that. For the next 10 years, Novak poured body and soul into independent research, exploring every conceivable approach to understanding the nature of death and the afterlife, studying psychology, archaeology, physiology, history, theology, comparative religion, mythology, folklore, many varieties of modern parapsychological research. He examined and compared the afterlife beliefs and religious texts of hundreds of cultures, old and new, interviewing and consulting with hundreds of near-death experiencers, past life regression subjects, ghost reporters, afterlife researchers, parapsychologists, theologians, religious scholars around the world. As Novak suspected from the beginning, there was a single truth, and it could be discovered. His book, The Division of Consciousness, is the story of that search and that discovery. Here is Peter Novak. Peter, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Where are you actually physically, Peter?
I'm just outside of South Bend, Indiana.
South Bend, Indiana. All right. How old are you now, Peter, may I ask?
I'm 40.
You're 40. All right. How long ago did you lose your wife?
In 1985.
85. That's a long time ago. So you were young.
Yeah, I was
really
in my 20s.
Might we ask what happened?
Actually, it was a suicide.
Oh my God. All right. I can understand, Peter, that I can surely understand if that were to occur to me right now, my quest would deepen, and I've been on this quest to understand all the things that you have been researching, and I can surely understand what drove you then to begin looking into all of this. Was she your soulmate? I mean, were you two very much in love?
Yes, we were very close.
Oh, God. So, of course you would want to understand the nature of life, I guess, and death. And they're all tied up together, sort of, when you talk about consciousness, aren't they?
Right.
I guess let's begin with a simple sort of 101 on consciousness. And Peter, what is consciousness? How do you define that?
Well, I would have to go with what psychology has been studying and what it claims to have discovered over the last century. It basically describes the human psyche as being composed of two parts, the conscious and the unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been very interested in the division of labor between the two halves.
I understand that, but going back to just consciousness for a second, so that we can understand that, what is consciousness? Is it simply self-awareness, awareness of self? Is that how we define consciousness?
I would describe it as being awareness, not necessarily of self.
Awareness. Awareness. Oh, just awareness, huh?
Right, because...
Of your surroundings, of the demonstration of emotion. I'm asking these questions because we're struggling, of course, to understand what consciousness... If they're working on computers really hard right now, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, we may get a conscious computer. And so would a computer simply being aware constitute a conscious computer, aware of its surroundings?
Well, there may be the distinction between consciousness and self-aware consciousness might be... that's probably an important distinction. I think that most people would describe self-aware consciousness as being, they would equate the two, as being consciousness. But I think that there would be such a thing as consciousness without being aware of being conscious. Like in some lower animals, they could very easily be aware of a number of things in their environment, but they've never actually realize that they are conscious, you know. They're more externally oriented.
I'm struggling with that one, too. That's another really, really interesting question, and that is whether animals have consciousness, whether animals, in effect, have souls. Those may be two separate questions, but I would, at the very least, believe that animals are conscious. Now, do you have a animal that is close to you, a dog, a cat, something like that?
Well, I have some pet cats.
Pet cats, I do too. That's what I favor, is cats. And I don't think I have any question in my mind about the fact that a cat is conscious, aware of its surroundings, certainly aware of itself,
mm-hmm.
aware of its needs, sometimes so amazingly so that I go, this is one smart cat. You know, thinking about things. I can look at a couple of my cats, and I can almost see their little cat brains, the wheels turning,
sure,
you know.
Of course.
Anyway, a division of consciousness, however we accept consciousness, a division, what do you mean by that?
Well, I refer to the distinction of the conscious and unconscious habits of the mind. The conscious, the science says, is logical and rational and objective.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the side of the mind that makes the decisions, that has free will.
Yes.
The unconscious is pretty much the opposite. It's subjective and emotional, and it possesses the memory, but it's not logical, and it does not have free will.
And it doesn't have free will. It doesn't have free will.
Yeah, the unconscious, that's what the scientists have been saying for about a century now, yeah. As a matter of fact, as far as it being possible to be conscious but not being self-aware conscious, I think you might see that sometimes in dreams. You know, in dreams, you know, you're aware of what's going on, but you're very often not actually aware that you're aware.
And you don't really have control. There are some people who
right.
claim they can control their dreams, but
sure,
I've never...
Sure, but that's the exception to the rule.
I've never controlled one of mine.
No, me neither.
And, in fact, you've never done a lot of things. You've never
right.
had an NDE, you've never seen a ghost, you've
no.
never done any of that.
All I've done is study them.
Study them. What did you, I guess I'm jumping to the end of the story, but I guess I can't help myself. In studying all of these religions, reports of life after death, and all the rest of this parapsychological stuff, what did you conclude?
Well, at first I concluded that there were very many different stories about life after death, and none of them seemed to agree with each other.
Mm-hmm.
But then at one point I realized that plugging what science has discovered about the nature and functions of the mind into the equation, all of a sudden, all of the different stories and legends and traditions and reports about the afterlife suddenly seemed to make good sense. I realized that a simple theory would account for the majority of phenomena that are being reported. And that theory was that the two halves of the mind, the conscious and the unconscious,
yes,
would divide apart at death, and each would go on alone, experiencing the afterlife separately, cut off from the other.
Oh, that's interesting. That the conscious and the unconscious, unconscious would separate and both go to the afterlife. Now, what have you concluded about reincarnation, if anything?
Well, I think that the reincarnation scenario is related to the conscious mind if it was separated from the unconscious after death. If the conscious and the unconscious halves of the mind divided apart, the conscious would be left without any memory whatsoever, in total amnesia, but still in full possession of its free will, still able to make new decisions and initiate new experiences, free to start a whole new life and a whole new identity. And that sounds an awful lot like reincarnation to me.
Could I substitute the word soul for conscious, the consciousness?
Well, actually, I relate soul to the unconscious and spirit to the conscious.
That's really something. That's a little confusing for me, and the one problem that I've always had with reincarnation is the fact that there is no continuation of consciousness.
Right.
What?
Of memory and of a self...
Of any sort of self-awareness at all.
Right.
That occurs only seemingly at the unconscious level.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when people do hypnotic regression or something like that and deeply probe into a person's background, they find they may have lived another life, but never does the consciousness know it has lived another life. Never. And so I always wondered, what good is that? We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 10th, You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 10th, 1999.
Top of the evening or morning, depending on where you are, everybody. Great to be here. Peter Novak is my guest. Again, before going back to Peter Novak very quickly, you remember my emailer's response from the Soho people. Remember that? To quote Paul McCartney, they finally said, stumped, tomorrow may rain, so I'll follow the sun. Listen to this. Death flares. This is from Discover magazine, April of 98. A Yale astronomer, Bradley Schaefer, has some interesting news for those of us who live here on Earth. He recently discovered that several nearby stars that closely resemble our very own sun can become violent, shooting off flares powerful enough to fry a planet more than a billion, that's a billion with a B, miles away. These things are 100 to 10 million times larger than the biggest solar flares ever seen. That's from Yale. Tomorrow may rain, so I'll follow the sun. I'm going to remember that forever. Back now to my guest, Peter Novak. We're talking about consciousness and actually a little bit about reincarnation. And where I left off with you, Peter, was that I've always pondered and I sort of leaned toward the concept of reincarnation, but I wondered always, what good is it? In the sense that I have no memories of any prior life, none whatsoever. And without those memories, what have I learned and how am I progressing?
You're not.
That's what I say. I'm not progressing.
Exactly right. I think that, I do think that reincarnation occurs, but I think the fact that we lose our memories is a colossal cosmic mistake. I think it's something actually related to the mythologies that we find in the Bible, as far as all of Adam and Eve and all that.
You can't just do that. did you say mythology involving Adam and Eve?
Well, the various creation myths.
Creation myths? Did you say creation myths?
Right.
Okay.
I think that they speak of actual events that occurred in which the conscious and the unconscious split apart for the first time. I think that was when we started reincarnating without remembering.
Wow.
If you look at the processes of how people say we reincarnate, it doesn't make any sense. Why would we go over these over and over and over again if we just lose everything at the end of every round?
That's right. What have we learned? Nothing. Just down here and play the game again.
Right.
From the start. But I'm not quite certain what you're saying here. You say creation myths. Do you believe that there was an Adam and Eve? You obviously do not, apparently.
I would say that the stories are allegorical, that they are symbolic of actual events, but I don't know that they're as
okay, well, if you don't think Adam and Eve were literal, then explain how it's allegorical. In other words, what really, if that didn't happen, what happened that caused somebody to make up that story? How about that?
Okay. there are a number of creation stories from cultures all over the world that start the story of existence, start the story of the beginning of mankind and Earth and all that, with the same idea of a very early primordial division in which there was a single godlike being or
yes.
a single substance which divided apart into two parts, and then these two parts start to interact with one another. There's a lot of different legends that describe this, but the most familiar to our culture would be the story of Adam and Eve.
Yes.
In which Eve is taken from Adam's side.
Yes.
If you actually look at the original Hebrew that the Bible was taken from,
yes.
you find that the word that is most commonly translated as side, or as rib, can actually also be translated as side, in which case the story is saying that one whole side of Adam was removed from him.
Eve was of Adam.
Eve was half of what had been his whole being.
Yeah.
I think that was the beginning of the human unconscious. You know, why is it that our minds are divided into two parts? When Freud first introduced this idea to the scientific community, the idea that the mind has this lower level that we're not familiar with, this unconscious, he thought it was an aberration. He did not think it was natural. He said it obviously exists. There's so much evidence supporting it, but there's something very wrong about this.
All right, we have sort of defined consciousness as awareness or even self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
How would you define the unconscious mind? Is that the mind that we have when we sleep, when we dream? Is that the unconscious mind?
Yes, I would say so. It's also the mind that gives us our memories, that gives us our emotions, that gives us our intuition.
Isn't that something? Because I would have thought it the other way around, that would have been an artifact. Those would be artifacts of the conscious mind, not the unconscious.
Well, according to what science has been discovering and describing for the last century, that is the distinction, the division of labor in the mind, is that one half is this logical half, and the other side is the side that has the emotion and the memory.
And you think it is a big mistake that there was a division of this conscious and unconscious?
Well, I think alienation might be better. I think there has always been a differentiation, okay? Like, in order for consciousness to exist, you have to have an interplay between the objective and the subjective, right?
Yes, of course.
Okay, but if these two parts are not merely differentiated to the point that they can interact, but if they're actually disassociated and alienated from each other, well, then you have problems. And I think that when people go through their lives and they're forever alienating themselves from their own unconscious, ignoring their own emotions, their own feelings, their own pangs of regret and
intuition,
all that, I think that every time you push these things back, pushing them back down out of your conscious mind, mm-hmm. you're splitting your own mind apart a little bit more, and then when you die, you finally discover what you did to yourself. You end up going off in two different directions.
Two different directions. And you are saying, in essence, that the conscious, what we have called the conscious mm-hmm. portion of ourselves, reincarnates.
Well, that would seem to be supported by what science says about how the mind works. What's interesting, you mentioned earlier about the past life regressions.
Yes.
And if the two halves of the mind divide apart, the conscious mind would be left without any emotion or memory, and without memory, it wouldn't have any ability to put any incoming data into any kind of context, and it wouldn't be able to recognize anything around it because it wouldn't be able to...
No, it starts from ground zero.
Right.
It gets spanked, it draws air, right. and it begins deciding that bottles and nipples are good.
Right.
And then it goes from there. So it starts out at ground zero.
Yeah, and in the beginning, at ground zero, there it would be with no feeling or emotion and no sense of context. You would feel itself to be floating utterly alone in nothingness, having no memory of who it is or what it was, having no emotion.
Or you go back all the way to the embryo, actually.
Beyond that, if you read the reports about past life regression, and you read reports of what people have said when they were regressed to a point in between lives,
yes,
they describe that exact thing. They're sitting there, they're floating in nothingness, they recognize nothing around them, they don't recall their name, they don't recall actually ever having had any other life or any other existence other than floating. They have no memory, no emotion. They're very calm and passionless.
And in a kind of a limbo, a dark, right. motionless
right.
limbo.
And all of those details are exactly what you would expect them to experience if they were a conscious mind that had been broken off, separated from their unconscious mind.
All right. let's say I accept that. And now let me ask you about the unconscious portion of the mind at death.
Mm-hmm.
What occurs to that?
Well, that explains a lot of things. It explains ghosts. It explains near-death experiences. It explains traditions of heaven and hell. As far as the near-death experience...
Traditions of heaven and hell.
Right.
Traditions of heaven and hell. That implication of that statement is that there is not heaven and hell as we understand
it. I just meant that our traditions of heaven and hell go back farther. Our reports of heaven and hell go back farther than merely modern-day stories of near-death experiences.
So then your studies would lead you to conclude there is, in fact, a heaven and hell.
I would conclude, my studies would conclude that people do experience heavens and hells. I don't know that there is a single one of each. I think there may be an infinite variety of experiences.
Well,
but what's interesting about the near-death experiences is that when people first leave their bodies in a near-death experience,
yes,
very, very commonly they will report floating above their body.
Oh, yes.
Being very calm and peaceful.
Absolutely.
And unperturbed and dispassionate.
Even watching people trying to revive them in many cases, all kinds of things. Oh, yes.
Now, this is, this would be a very traumatic experience. You've gone through something physically traumatic and something totally unprecedented has happened. You left your body. This is not a time to be emotionally relaxed. This is a time to be, very passionately involved in what's going on. But people are
totally panicked. Actually,
just the opposite.
Totally panicked. Actually,
right?
Like, oh my God, I'm out of my body. Look at my body is wrecked. Yeah. So you would imagine panic.
I think that this is another piece of evidence suggesting that they're unconscious. The half of their mind that produces emotion has been separated from them at that point.
But in the case of people who have NDEs, there is a recombination of the unconscious and the conscious.
At a later point, I believe that recombination seems to occur at the time of the memory review.
You mean like the past? People call it, experiencers call it the life review.
Right.
Danion,
right.
I'm sure you know of Danion Brinkley.
Sure.
He's a good friend of mine, very good friend. I talked to him earlier today, in fact, stricken with the flu at the moment. But he had a very, very, very intense full life review. He was not a good person when he was younger. And he had to, he said, live the experiences of those he had treated poorly as they felt them. He felt them as he had dished it out.
Mm-hmm. I think that the characteristics of the mind, of the unconscious, would absolutely insist that sort of a memory review would occur if the mind divided apart at death.
Hmm.
If the unconscious divided away from the conscious mind, it would be cut off from all logical thought processes, which would effectively isolate it from all objective reality. Its experience from that point on would be limited to subjectively reviewing, processing, and reacting to its own inner contents, its stored up memories.
But in order to, in effect, feel what others felt from you,
mm-hmm.
and review your own life, in itself would seem to me to be a conscious exercise.
No, I think it'd probably be automatic.
But in order to review it, to be subjective about it,
mm-hmm.
you would have to be able to consider it, feel it, experience it.
Okay, but these are all subjective processes that I think would occur automatically. The unconscious, one interesting, very interesting thing to me about the unconscious mind that science has been saying for the last 100 years, is that the unconscious mind contains within itself, it's hardwired into the system, that it has a moral awareness, a moral quality to it, a natural awareness for issues of right and wrong.
Uh-huh.
So I think that when the unconscious found itself isolated and alone and didn't have anything else to do but go back and start reviewing its memories, as it did that, it would become acutely aware of all violations of its own moral sense as it was going through those memories.
It has no choice.
Right.
It has absolutely no choice.
Right.
This process occurs, period.
Right. And the unconscious is also emotional and reactive. It's automatically emotional and automatically reactive. And so as it was going through those memories, and it was judging them, basically, saying, this is right, that was wrong, this is right, that was wrong, it would react to those judgments emotionally. If the judgments that it saw, that it felt, were good, it would react by feeling good. If those judgments were poor, it would react by feeling poor. And then we also know that the unconscious is very imaginative. You know, it's very fertile. And so, as it was going through these memory reviews and these judgments and these reactions, it would build up elaborate dream world fantasies revolving around all of those things. I think it would create its own heaven out of its sense of joy from those memories and...
Or its own hell.
Right, from its own agony.
It would then, in effect, sentence itself to a period of joy or a period of... I don't know, what's the right word? A period of... I don't know exactly, like punishment, but self-inflicted agony over the guilt.
Right. And what's interesting is that if the unconscious was isolated like that, these experiences would fill its entire field of awareness. They would become absolute, intense, ever-increasing. Whatever joy it felt would be an absolute joy. Whatever agony I felt would be an absolute agony.
On that note, hold on, Peter. Peter Novak is my guest. His book, The Division of Consciousness, Time After Time. I'm Art Bell. Time after time, do we just keep coming back and doing it again?
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 10th, 1999.
To faith and darkness has turned to cry. Watching through windows, you're wondering if I'm okay. Secrets stolen.
My love, what a tale my thoughts could tell. Just like an old-time movie about a ghost from a wishing well. In a castle dark or a fortress strong, with chains upon my feet, you know that ghost is me. And I will never be set free. As long as I'm a ghost, you can't see. If I could read your mind, love, what a tale your thoughts could tell. Just like a paperback novel, the kind the drugstore sells. When you reach the part where the heartaches come, the hero would be me. Heroes often fail. You won't read.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 10th, 1999.
Fascinating. I'll never be set free as long as I'm a ghost you can't see. Gordon Lightfoot. Maybe my guest will have a take on that one. Anyway, we'll get back to my guest in a moment. I've got several interesting responses to Peter Novak already. The first I want to read you is this one. Hi, Art. I've just got to share this with you. We have an unconscious cat. This cat is so stupid that it has to think, what was that, when it sees a mouse? I heard a noise the other night, says Phil from New Hampshire. Went out to the kitchen, and here's my unconscious cat, playing it safe with a mouse, not getting too close to it, but wanting to watch it. Now that's an unconscious cat. Zero mice caught in 2 years, but I love her anyway. Phil in Glen, New Hampshire. Then I guess you'll be able to tell what kind of response this is, Peter. It simply says, what a loser this guy is. God is consciousness. Don't you know? Read, understand, everything has consciousness because God is everything. Care to respond to that in any way at all?
Well, actually, I would tend to agree, but...
If you would speak right into the phone for us.
I would tend to agree, but I think that, again, you have the division that has to be taken into account. In the Bible and a number of other traditions, God seems to have two different sides to him. In the Bible, the Bible talks about God having both a soul and a spirit. And it's interesting that they describe these as being very similar to the way that modern science describes the conscious and the unconscious. God's spirit is very often shown to be speaking or thinking or acting, whereas his soul is shown to be feeling or to be remembering. These are all classic characteristics associated with the conscious and the unconscious.
All right. Maybe this will help. Art a thought. Perhaps Peter could walk us through a typical NDE and explain what happens as it reflects his theory of the conscious and the unconscious. In other words, the typical NDE. What does a person go through? I've interviewed many, but I'd like to get your take. What is a typical NDE, Peter?
Well, I'm not entirely sure that in an NDE, because they do come back, I don't know that there is a final, an absolute division that does occur between the conscious and the unconscious.
Well said.
I think that there is there's some degree of splitting, but I don't think it's total.
I got you. That split only occurs when you're really dead, all the
way
dead.
Right.
Dead as in not coming back for several days, weeks, months, years, ever.
But some of the things that people do report do reflect this division in process. Like when they first separate from the body and they describe not having any emotion or feeling, that suggests that there's been some division.
Yes, sir.
And the person at that point is speaking from the perspective of the conscious mind alone.
Yes, sir. I understand exactly what you're saying. Where do you believe that the wife that you tragically lost is now?
Well, actually, that was had a lot to do with the whole beginning of my search.
Because, of course it would. Yes, of course.
When my wife died, she left a daughter, just 5 months old at the time. And one of the things I kept on thinking about, well, what am I going to tell her about where her mother is now?
Yep.
That's how my whole search started.
5 years old.
5 months
old. Did you say 5 months old?
5 months old, yes.
5 months old. Oh,
right.
Lord.
As far as where she is now, well, I would imagine, my theory does not say that everyone always divides apart, that the conscious and unconscious, the evidence does not seem to suggest that this always happens, but it does suggest that it happens frequently, maybe even most of the time.
Okay. All right.
So I would suggest that part of her is in some kind of an unconscious dream world reality, and the other half perhaps has reincarnated by now.
Did you see the movie, you must have, What Dreams May Come?
Sure, of course.
Did you regard that as perhaps in some way consistent with what you've been telling us tonight?
Parts of it were and parts of it did not seem to be. The unconscious does seem, the experience of the unconscious after death, it would seem to be that thoughts would form its reality very quickly, right? Whatever it thought about, that would be immediately what it experienced.
Right.
Very, very much a subjective thing, very much like in a dream.
Right.
As soon as you think of it, there it is. But on the other hand, if this division does occur, then in that unconscious dream world, there isn't any such thing as choosing or deciding. It's all pretty much an automatic process.
It just happens.
Right.
All right. Somebody else wrote to me, never say never, Art. Well, I have learned that. You simply have not met an advanced soul who does remember. There are not many of those in the Western world. In fact, this whole world, Earth, for this world, is nothing more than a child. And what child of 1 year of age can even remember yesterday? Interesting and true.
There are a lot of people who do claim to remember past lives.
Well, I'm not one of them.
No, I'm not either. I'm not either. But you have to acknowledge that these reports are out there. I'm not entirely sure how integrated these reports people are, as far as do they simply have fleeting memories of their past lives? Or they have they actually integrated those previous identities with their present identity?
Then you think your wife has separated, and one part of her has already, the conscious portion of her has reincarnated.
I don't know. I don't know how long it takes to reincarnate.
That's true.
I think it's possible. I don't know. It could be that she's still floating in that nothingness. Maybe they do that for years.
Well, surely because of your particular tragedy and interest, you must have had particular attention to those who take their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
What have you concluded about that? Is there a difference?
I would expect that people who do that are more divided, or as divided as a human being can be, and I would consider it very unlikely that they would end up. If there is such a thing as a division between the conscious and the unconscious after
yes.
death, I think they would be some of the people most certain to go through that division.
Huh. The traditional concept of reincarnation is that you keep coming back until you more or less get it right. Isn't that, that's oversimplified, but is that about right?
That's a very common interpretation of it, yes.
Mm-hmm. So that somebody who might take their own life, for example, would be seen as certainly not getting it right and would be more likely to divide and return.
Right.
Do I have that right?
That makes sense to me, yeah.
Okay. You investigated ghosts?
Yes, and again, I found them to be... A lot of the reports seem to be very similar with this, the concept of the mind explaining the different kinds of ghosts. One of the most commonly reported kind of a ghost is the sleepwalking ghost, the haunting ghost, the one that goes through the same motions over and over and over again, wearing really, really old clothing, walking through old buildings, going
yep.
possibly even through old floor plans that don't even exist anymore.
That's right. I call it the tape loop ghost.
Right. This is exactly the sort of behavior that you would expect from an unconscious if it was separated from its conscious mind. It would be left without any rational intellect, totally subjective and isolated from objective reality, running on full automatic, reviewing its memories, experiencing them again and again and again.
You're the first one that has ever, Peter, explained that to me in a way I could understand. Now, that suddenly makes sense. If there is a division, that would explain the tape loop ghost. Gosh, that's fascinating.
Now, there's another kind of ghost that is less commonly reported. It's a lost soul kind of ghost.
Yes.
And I think that could very well be... the conscious mind when it's separated from the unconscious. It would have perfect and total amnesia, and it would be unable to recall or perceive any meaning or pattern or context in anything it encountered.
It might not even know it's dead.
Right. It wouldn't know much of anything. It wouldn't be able to make sense out of anything that it saw. Wandering aimlessly, lost, confused. That's a very commonly reported type of ghost. Not as common as the other one, of course.
That makes all the sense in the world. So, what kind of transition did you make in your own mind as you began investigating all of this? Do you think that you arrived at the conclusions you arrived at because you wanted to, or because of objective research? You understand the nature of that question. Obviously, you were emotionally impacted by the suicide mm-hmm. of your wife, and so have you ever wondered yourself, Peter, whether you whether your conclusions are a result of your experience?
I have been very reluctant to embrace these conclusions, simply because, you know, basically what I'm saying is that I've discovered an explanation that makes sense of all the different afterlife reports and traditions, and that's a very big claim to make.
Yes, it is.
And so I have reviewed the research and the material and the data again and again and again, and still I have been hesitant. You know, when I first discovered this and I first came across this theory that seemed to put it all together, make sense, I thought I was going crazy. I thought, this isn't possible. This kind of answer people aren't ever going to find. No one's going to find this answer. That's a belief that a lot of people have today, and it's a belief that inside of me, I guess I had a little bit. I was very reluctant to even consider the fact that an answer that I would have found it anyway. So I kept on looking and reviewing the research, but the fact is that the material out there, the afterlife reports, as well as the ancient traditions from religions, they all fit into this pattern.
Mm-hmm.
According to this one little idea that the conscious and unconscious divide apart, it explains virtually all of the evidence I have encountered.
How do you think the traditional you studied psychology at Purdue. How do you think the traditional psychology community would react to your findings?
Well, about 50 years ago, they would have been a lot more interested in them than they would be now, because for the last 50 years, 30 years anyway, the study of psychology has gone a lot more into trying to explain everything in terms of brain function.
Right.
In terms of just a piece of meat.
Piece of meat.
But no. Earlier than that, the origins of psychology with mm-hmm. Freud and Jung
yes.
described the mind as being independent of the body.
Oh, yes.
You know, and they described, when their research described the two halves of the mind that I'm interested in, the conscious and the unconscious. And that was back, in the first half of the century. Now, that view of the nature of the mind got a big boost about 15 years ago with the book Right Brain, Left Brain, which again supported the idea that there were two very different halves of the mind
mm-hmm.
function in these ways. And then that view got another big boost just last year with the book Of Two Minds, written by Frederick Schiffer, professor at Harvard, which again is talking about the mind having two, you know, it's supporting the traditional Freudian view of the mind with the conscious and unconscious.
All right. When you go back, you've labeled Adam and Eve as sort of an allegorical thing,
mm-hmm.
and creation, what is it you believe about creation? Let there be light. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think that those stories, to some degree, reflect the beginnings of self-aware consciousness within reality, within God itself, perhaps. The first time that objective thought and subjective thought differentiated from each other enough that they could interact, you know. If you have an eye staring off blankly into space, it's never going to see itself and realize that it's there and that it's conscious. You need that mirror, the unconscious, the subjective part, for it to reflect back upon itself so it can see and say, yes, I see myself. I am aware.
Right. We're going to take a break here at the bottom of the hour, and when we come back, I want to take a few phone calls and see what all of you think. Peter Novak is my guest, and his book is The Division of Consciousness. I do have one more question, which goes back to the Bible. What about he who walked 2,000 years ago? Allegorical or real? I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 10, 1999. March 10th, 1999.
Perhaps people in the void.
Disturb the sound of silence.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell. My guest, Peter Novak, will be right back. I've got this fax from Boston, I think. Yep. Hello from Boston, it says. The fax is entitled, I Sold My Soul on eBay. How are you, Art? I fell in love with your show on a road trip to Atlanta last year and been listening ever since. Say, you know that online auction site eBay? Well, I was paying them my daily visit the other night and discovered the strangest thing. People selling their souls. Some souls are getting upwards of $10 million. Some souls even come with bonus cat souls. If you do a search for a human soul, you'll see what I'm talking about. What are you looking for? He goes on, now, I'm not the one to say if this is all humor or if it's for real, but can you imagine if people are actually paying for other people's souls? Please respond in any way you can. If you can get online during your show, I suggest you do it and read a couple of the auctions on air. For instance, one human soul slightly damaged due to lightning strike. Thanks for your time and good night, Scott in Boston. Well, I'm going to have to give that a try, Scott. I don't know. What are you looking for? Hi there. Peter, welcome back.
Hi, thanks.
I want to give you an opportunity. We're going to go to the phones here in this segment. But I want to give you an opportunity to plug your book, The Division of Consciousness. Where is that book available?
It's available at most of the big bookstores, you know, Barnes & Noble's, Borders, that sort of thing. And, of course, you can get on the internet at Amazon.com.
And I think we've got a link to that on my website, so they could go there. All right. Very good. So available nationally and Amazon.com through my website, blah, blah, blah. So that's good. That's easy. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Peter Novak. Good morning to you.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
Hi. Nice to talk to you, Art. I'm calling for Bellingham, Washington, KGIM 790. This is Sonny.
Yes, Sonny.
I'd like to pose a question to Mr. Novak.
Yes.
Is it possible, or did which side of the brain do you think, if it's possible, formed first, the right or the left? I would say it would be the right formed first, because it found out it couldn't survive without the left. You couldn't wrestle a rhino to the ground with the feelings. You have to have some logic on the left-hand side. And if my theory is true, would the two sides now be working and evolving toward a third, let's say a third of a third of a third of a brain instead of just two halves?
Peter?
That's my question. Good night, Art. I'm going to listen off the air.
All right. Which part of the brain evolved first, do you think, Peter, right or left?
Well, actually, I think that they probably evolved simultaneously, and they then slowly differentiated. There was originally a single... I don't know, I'm talking about the brain so much as the mind itself. I don't identify the two.
I know what you're talking about. In other words, you have been sort of preaching throughout all this that the separation between what the psychologists are now looking at in modern day is the meat that we are, the physical meat that we are, versus the immortal aspects of ourselves, yes?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought it was. All right, in that case, we'll not discuss the other part. One quick question before we go back to phones, and that is, that man who walked around here a couple thousand years ago, described in the Bible,
mm-hmm.
allegorical or absolutely?
Well, I think that was not only a true story. I think that's the whole linchpin of history and the linchpin of this theory that I'm talking about. If this theory is correct, and that we do divide, the most people divide apart at death,
yes.
We keep on losing our souls. We keep on losing our unconscious minds and all of our memories and all of our egos, life after life after life, and then just keep building up and building up and building up in the collective unconscious, I assume.
All right.
And they would be forever lost to us if not for what that man did 2,000 years ago. I think that through his... This is rather complicated. I don't know if I can explain it all over the phone, but I believe that what he did allowed... was the thing that allowed the Judgment Day prophecies to actually be possible, that they could be fulfilled, and which, of course, you know that the one of the most important things about that is that all the dead from all past history is supposed to rise back up again.
Yes, I know.
I think that what he did made that possible. But what's interesting is that if this theory is true, if reincarnation is true, then all those people, all those past dead that are supposed to return again in the last day, they are not going to return in separate bodies, but instead they're going to be popping up from within the backs of our own minds, popping up back up to consciousness within our own skulls.
Huh.
And we're going to suddenly have, what, dozens or hundreds of other people floating around inside of our own bodies at the same time.
Wow, which is interesting. What a mess that's going to be.
Because a lot of the Old Testament prophecies about Judgment Day describe that very thing. They talk about an invasion. The Judgment Day would be the time of a great invasion. And they describe the invading army as being ancient and enduring, the most ruthless of all peoples. And if it was an army of the recently risen from the dead souls, they would be both ancient and enduring, and as people who quite literally knew what it meant to be dead, they would indeed be very ruthless.
Understood. All right. Fascinating. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello there.
Yeah, Art, this is Alan from Salem.
Okay, meet Peter Novak and Art Bell.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
I've got something I wanted to ask you here. That man you're talking about that existed 2,000 years ago, it talks about him in the book, removing demons from people who are possessed. Now, these demons can move from person to person, and they don't die, they just keep moving down the line. In the Bible, it's written that everyone is to be born in the flesh only once. Now, my idea on this is the fact that these demons possess memories, and they can go into one person, bring the memories from the last person they were in to that person, and this is the general consensus that most Christians have. Because, of course, most Christians don't believe in reincarnation.
So, in other words, what he is thinking of reincarnation, you view as a demon jumping from one mortal to another.
And bringing those memories
with
and fooling the person into thinking they were that person, even though those memories were brought to that person by that demon.
Clearly, I understand.
It's just something I wanted to throw in there. I'll let you go now, and
all right.
I sure appreciate your show.
All right, thank you very much. Peter, there's one for you.
Well, I think that such things as demons do exist, and in fact, I think that they are composed of composites of, you know, discarded souls within the collective unconscious. But I think that most people, when they do, I don't think that, first of all, there's very many people that do recall their past life memories. But what's interesting is that most of the people that do seem to be, they don't seem to present any indications of being possessed. On the contrary, they seem to be exceptionally, people of exceptional integrity and honor and even spirituality. So I think that it's a, it'd be a poor argument to make to say that these people are possessed when they actually seem to have some of the highest examples of human...
All right, boy, I understand what you're saying. Boy, have I got a call for you, I think. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Peter Novak. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, where are you, dear?
I'm in South Carolina.
South Carolina.
My name is Brenda.
Brenda, all right.
I saw on a program, I think it was called The Other Side, where if you asked a child that was 3 or under, if they remembered their having died, that a lot of them could.
That's
so
right.
I tried it on my granddaughter.
Oh, you did?
Yes, and she scared me to death.
What did she say? What did she say, Brenda?
She told me, yes, that she remembered 3 men broke into her house, and they were trying to take her. And she all of a sudden dropped her head, and she says, Grandmommy, I wished I hadn't screamed and woke Mommy up, because they killed Mommy.
Oh, my God.
And it was...
Now, this she was 3?
Yes.
How did you ask her exactly? How did you ask her?
I just said, Jessica, do you remember when you died? And she said, yeah.
Wow.
And she started telling me about it.
Wow.
It scared me.
Believe me, I understand. Peter, have you done any research into this sort of thing?
Well, there's a book that's been written on this, on the past life memories of children. I don't remember the name of it, actually, but it's something that came out in the last few years. Yeah, I think that kids seem to be able to have more memory of the past lives than, you know, adults do. Very fascinating. Again, this would support the idea that, you know, in order to obtain these memories, you have to have some degree of integrity, you know, which kids do, and they don't lose really until they get older.
Brenda?
Yes.
How old is that child now?
She's 5.
She's 5.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a few years, you ought to try it again and see what you get.
I tried it on her sister, and it didn't work on her.
How old
she
was...
She just laughed at me.
And how old was she?
She was like 2 when I asked her.
She was 2 and she laughed.
Right. She just laughed about it. She wouldn't tell me anything. So I figured she just didn't remember because she seemed really puzzled by it. But her older sister, she had a problem after relating this to me. She started having nightmares about the men breaking in and getting her and her mother.
Wow. Wow, that's absolutely remarkable, Brenda. And I'm not sure whether to say you have random anecdotal evidence and whether you shouldn't have asked that question or whether you really do have something significant. But that's really something.
I didn't want to believe in reincarnation until she was so sincere about it and went into such detail about it.
Sure. Did you do any research? Did you ask her what was your name or anything like that?
No, I didn't, because it freaked me out so bad.
I hear that.
It was bothering her, too, and I just wanted her to forget about it and talk about something else.
Brenda, thank you. That is remarkable. That is really remarkable, and it certainly would scream for more research.
Mm-hmm.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Peter Novak. Hi.
Good evening, Art. First, I'd like to say my thoughts with Richard.
Thank you.
The gentleman who keeps attacking him, well, personally, I think he's mentally impotent for attacking someone for their beliefs.
Well, no, mentally impotent not for that, but for attacking, not for beliefs, not for data points, but personal ad hominem attacks just to attack. That's pretty lame.
Well,
I mean, if somebody wants to attack what you believe, then hey, no problem. If they want to attack your theories, your data, your logic, whatever that is, that's fine. That's supposed to happen and better happen, or we're not being honest with each other. But when you just attack a person's character, that's a different story.
True enough.
Anyway.
My question is, for your guest, why would they so-called, I guess, recycle the conscious half instead of the subconscious? I mean, wouldn't it be better, actually, to, you know, recycle the subconscious?
Well, as far as being able to retain, you know, what you've done over the course of a life, yeah, sure, that would be better. I don't know it's a matter of everything being designed this way. I'm pretty much convinced that the whole division and the loss of memory was a mistake. It's an error that has been introduced into a system that was working properly before that error occurred.
Mm.
I think that, you know, the whole biblical idea about history, about there being a fall from grace, and then Jesus came to correct it, and then at Judgment Day everything is going to get restored to the way it was before. I think that all fits into this, that at the fall from grace was when we first started doing this dividing, and, you know, things haven't been working right since.
Hmm. Wow.
All right.
Anyway, thank you, Art.
All right, thank you, sir. And you too. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Peter Novak.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I'm calling from Honolulu, KHVH.
Oh, yes.
And then it sounds like we are in a three-dimensional world with time. So when,
yes,
before we're born, I guess we're in an infinite time. Well, there's no time. Yes?
A place infinity. Where there is no time. Yes, I quite agree with you, and I think that Peter does as well.
Right. Yeah.
Both the conscious, or both the soul and the spirit, you know, whether you're talking about the soul, the spirit weighing in between lives, or the soul and it's a dream world, neither one seems to experience time the same way that we do, according to the reports.
Yeah, I think the unconscious, if that's eternal, that would be like the Akashic Records that the Indians talk about, yeah?
Right, right.
So that would be the eternal thing. And then our consciousness we get from birth because we enter this three dimension with time, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah. And then, let's see. Oh, yeah, and then what you were talking about before, the grace, that would be like when we're in this another dimension that's, you know, beyond time, before we're born.
Right, independent of time, I suppose.
One could imagine doing research. If you go back to the lady who was on the air with us a little while ago, who was so fascinating, I think it was Brenda. If you were to do a more involved investigation, if you didn't get freaked out, and I'm like Brenda, I would have freaked out, but if you could actually get a name and a place and a time to go with what occurred, the way you were killed or died in the prior life, then you could actually do research, and
sure,
you could endeavor to prove that. And you do that from a 2 or 3 year old, and baby, I'm not sure how you argue against that one. If you do the research,
that research has been ongoing. Ian Stevenson from University of Virginia has spent his whole life compiling data along those lines of memories of past lives, and then trying to follow up with actual data that supports those stories about, you know, people and places and the events from the past.
How would anybody possibly dispute that?
I don't know, but they do.
I just can't understand how they would dispute it, not from a 2 or 3 year old. You say they do. Well, all right. You have been very, very, very interesting to have on the air, and I hope that people will run out and get your book.
I hope so, too. Thank you.
It has been a pleasure to have you on the air, Peter, and you've given me a lot to think about. And the high point of the night for me, I discuss this kind of thing all the time, has been the explanation, rather elegant, I must say, of what I call the tape reel or the tape loop ghost.
Mm-hmm.
No one has ever answered that one for me until you came around. How long did you take to write this book, Peter?
I started the research, well, after my wife died, and I came up with this theory in 1988, and it took me 9 years to write the book and find a publisher. Yeah.
9 years. That's a lot of research. That's a whole lot of research.
Yeah, it is, and there's an awful lot of it that ended up in the book.
All right. In that case, people have a lot to look forward to. Peter, again, my thanks for coming on the air with me, and you've given me a lot to think about.
Thank you.
All right. Good night. That is Peter Novak, and his book is The Division of Consciousness. And that is indeed something to consider, isn't it? All right, what we are going to do with the remainder of the evening, another couple hours, is nothing but open lines. Unscreened, unpredictable, the complete unknown. If you want to, Brenda was a particularly interesting call, wasn't she? If you would like to respond to what Brenda had to say, if you have an answer for that would make some sense, I'd like to hear it. I can't imagine any reasonable answer to what a three-year-old would say about an immediate response with an absolute story about how she died. That really is eerie, isn't it? All right, we're going to break here at the top of the hour, and when we come back, 2 hours of the absolute unknown. So if you've got something you'd like to slip in, here we are from the high desert. I'm Art Bell, the news on Richard Hoagland. Good. Richard has come through the operation intact and is in recovery, and we're going to have to watch him very closely for the next 48 hours, let's say, and get him out of the woods. So if you've been thinking good thoughts, don't stop. This is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 10, 1999. Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired March 10, 1999.
That's Ross Mitchell, voice of Ross Mitchell, and he's making, since my area code has changed, actually it's in the process of change, I really feel so violated about that, incidentally. He's making new bumpers, and I offered up a suggestion today, and it's if he does it, it's really going to be a cool bumper. Number bumper. Anyway, there'll be new ones soon because of my new area code. Has that happened to you? For a while, you feel violated.
They have taken your number.
Soon your name. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey.
Hey.
Change that dial.
Yeah. Don't touch that dial.
Okay.
Very good. You're
How
on,
you doing, dude?
Pretty good, actually.
You gonna hang out with me for until you get back on?
Well, I am back on.
Oh, outstanding. Hey, listen, about 6 months ago, a couple months ago,
which means you're on, too.
Oh, okay.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I've got you.
We're both on the air.
Okay, well, I'm in the other room also. I'm looking for this guy you had on about 6 months ago.
Yes.
And he said that he saw some sort of plasmic energy-type being thing falling through the ceilings, and the cats could see him, and people could see him coming out of the corner of their eyes. Not out of the corner of their eyes, but you could see them horrifically.
I remember that, but I don't remember who it was either.
No, you know, I vaguely remember seeing some of these things. You always turn your head and you kind of think you see things.
Yes.
And I was just wondering if I could, well, you can't remember, so I guess I can't get the information.
Things seen at the edge of vision. It's a line I used for dreaming.
That's it. The things seen at the end of edge of
vision.
Edge
of vision, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was just, you know, geez, I'm scratching my head hardly, just trying to get back to that sort of, that date when you were talking about it. You know, I was trying to, you guys are on such late at night.
I know.
You know.
I know. Well, you know, there is, of course, Dreamland, right?
Don't you know?
I sat down and I concentrated really, really hard on what to say for Dreamland, how to frame what Dreamland is about, which also now really is what Coast is about, too. Listen to the words in the opening to Dreamland. Listen to what I say, because I thought hard about it before I wrote it, and it's right on the money. Listen to this.
Welcome to Dreamland, a program dedicated to an examination of areas in the human experience not easily nor neatly put in a box. Things seen at the edge of vision, awakening a part of the mind as yet not mapped, and yet things every bit as real as the air we breathe but don't see. Is Dreamland.
I thought really hard when I wrote that about what I wanted the program to be, what I wanted the whole concept to be, and that explains it very well indeed, and that's really what we do here now as well. Things seen at the edge of vision. And there are a lot of things like that, aren't there? Whether you see them for real or see them in your mind's eye, sometimes you catch a glimpse of them at the edge of vision. Sometimes it's just a mental thing. But they're as real as the telephone lines blinking in front of me. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Just fine, sir.
Is this Art?
Good guess.
Okay, I'm sorry. I had to turn off my radio.
I'm the only one here, so when I answer the phone, that's the only possibility. It's got to be me.
Okay, sorry about that. Hey, by the way, my name's Bill. I'm calling from St. Cloud, Minnesota.
Yes, Bill.
Okay, I sent you a little email just a little while back indicating that on July 5th, Wednesday of 1999, you're going to receive a vision that is going to unlock
me personally?
Your understanding.
Me personally?
Yeah, you personally.
July 5th, huh?
Well, you're one of those people. Well, actually, all of us are involved with this. Are you familiar with non-linear existence?
No.
Non-linear existence.
Well, I could take that phrase apart and I could guess at its meaning, yeah.
Okay, well, essentially what it is where you can travel through the past, present, and future.
Yeah.
Without aging, without becoming younger.
I understand. No, okay. believe me, I understand. I'll look forward to the vision. We talked about that earlier tonight. That only in our dimension, in our three dimensions, do we have an understanding of time, or does time have meaning at all? And that it may well be that, for example, when we die, we go to a place that virtually has no time. Nor do we realize the passage of it. There's no reference. You've really got to let your mind open up to understand and accept that possibility, that there would be a place where time would not exist. It simply would be not relevant, nor would you notice the passage of anything you would call time. It simply isn't there. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art. This is Brent from Washington.
Yes, sir.
I had a experience where I understood you were looking for this faith that a lot of people had.
I suppose I am. I'm looking for it in a very demanding manner, which may mean I'll never find it.
Okay, experiment number 8, but you have to be kind of down on the rocks to get there. That's why a lot of people say Christianity is a crutch, because you got to lean hard. That's what faith is. So experiment number 8 would be, just ask Jesus Christ some night when you're alone if he's real to show you. That's what I did, and I found out he's for real.
Okay, I'm going to tell you a truth.
Yes, sir.
I have done that.
Keep... What happened?
Nothing.
That's what I mean. Keep on knocking, you know?
All right, I understand what you're saying, but I've done that. Come on, don't think I haven't. Haven't you all done that? Haven't you ever said things like, you know, the reborn do, you know, the reborn people out there, there's a lot of them. Jesus, if you're there, God, come into my life, give me a sign, that kind of thing, right? We all ask ourselves those personal things, so don't think I haven't done that. So far, nothing apparent. No particular answer, maybe at least one that I would understand. Sure, I've done that, of course. I think everybody has done that. Some people seem to get answers and confirmations, and others just keep asking. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, what's going on?
You, right now, so turn your radio off.
I got it.
That's good.
Wait
a minute. Where are you?
I am in Phoenix.
And your first name is?
Tim.
Tim, okay.
And I was listening to your program last night.
Yes.
And I was extremely distraught by the information.
Yeah, me too.
Portrayed there, and my girlfriend's like sort of forbidden me from listening to you, but here I am again.
Man, you're really breaking that one. You're not just listening. You know. I mean, you're calling, participating in the madness.
Well, you know, it's the first time for me and everything, but...
How did she say that? I mean, how did she forbid you? Didn't you bring up the Bill of Rights and...
Well,
didn't you say, woman, I'm king of my house, damn it? If I want to listen to this, I'll listen to it.
No,
get away from me, woman. Bring me a beer.
It's not that. She just,
what,
she,
then?
She just said that she didn't like me listening to it, because, like, I'm a bit of a skeptic myself and don't want to believe everything that you portray in your program.
Well, I don't believe it either. I don't believe everything.
But I think that the press as a whole isn't addressing the issue of, like, a solar flare to the extent that it should be.
Yeah. Shall I go over my McCartney quote again?
Yeah, go for it.
Tomorrow may rain, so I'll follow the sun. I mean, that it took several scientists at the Jet Propulsion Lab there to come up with that in an answer. Tomorrow may rain, so I'll follow the sun. McCartney quote.
Well, that's what we pay the scientists all that government money for.
You've got to at least, I guess, say they've got a sense of humor. Or not, I don't know.
No, right. I didn't. Well, hey, I really enjoy the program.
All right.
And I did meditate.
Well, look, remember, next time, show a little pride. I mean, say, look, I'm king of this household. Away from me. All right?
All right.
And call me from the hospital.
Will do.
All right. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Jean from Seattle.
Hi, Jean.
And,
wait a minute. I discern you're on a cellular phone.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I'm one of those drive-in work people.
That's all. At 2:17 in the morning in the West, you're going to work?
No, I drive a taxi.
Oh, I see. All right. Well, anyway, welcome.
Anyway, I would like to say two things. I'm really happy that I managed to get on the air. And the first one is that there are quite a few people in Seattle that listen to you, and it would be a lot nicer if I could just prod them into continuing to come to the chat, the Artville Chat Club meetings like they should, and that way we could all sit around and help each other out to talk some of this stuff out. It would be, you know, much better to be able to, I can't talk to my family. I say, you know, gee, these aliens came and they created us or whatever, you know. And my family just thinks that I'm crazy and I can't even talk to friends. I sound so stupid when I try to discuss any of these topics. I sound like an idiot.
They probably say something to you like, dear, you've been spending too many hours on the road.
I know. It's just like that. And they don't want to listen. And I think, well, listen, there's this really valid point here. This is a, you know, I start trying to talk something about mitochondrial DNA and they look at me like I'm just sick. So I just think it would be nicer if a lot more of the people that listen to your show would come to the chat clubs wherever they're at and give people like me who have...
So what you're really saying is that people who listen to my program need support groups.
Right. Unfortunately, I think we do because it's something. There's so many amazing things out there, and so many people have such closed minds.
I know.
And it's some beautiful things going on and some scary things going on. And the second thing I wanted to address was Y2K.
Okay.
I went in my bank today, and I'm just all happy because I'm getting all ready for it, and I'm looking at some property, and I'm you know, considering, you know, all my storage. Anyway, I'm pretty much preparing myself. And I was in my bank going, oh, yeah, and excuse me if I don't put any more money in the bank, ha-ha. And I was actually talking to the bank manager at the time, and I'd known her for a couple of years because I banked there, and she just looked at me like I was sick, and she says, oh, I can't believe people are still going. We were Y2K compliant back in December, and we're just testing now, and I'm saying, you know,
Wait a minute. We were compliant back in December. Now, that implies that the end of testing has come. And the verdict is absolute compliance. Now, so what do you mean? So what do you mean?
Yeah.
We were compliant then, and we're testing now.
Yeah, she was saying, well, we were done with the Y2K readiness, whatever they were doing, on December this date, and all of the banks had to be that way, and all the banks are ready now, and we're all in the testing stage now. I said, well, you know, I think that
this is not right. No, it's not right.
Looked at me like I was stupid.
If she was compliant, then she wouldn't need to be doing testing, would she?
No, yes.
If they were sure of compliance. Yeah. No, the answer is yes. Yeah.
And so then she said, well, I'll give you this Y2K pamphlet. And so she gave me a pamphlet on how to prepare your business for Y2K. And it had nothing at all to do with this bank's preparedness, and it's a major, major bank. And
store
and evidently
food,
she didn't have anything to
store
have
water.
Anything to give me. No, it said about your business. How, you know, you might need to buy the newest version of your Windows or whatever, you know,
sort of thing.
Really downplaying it. But just the way she looked at me, I feel like I've come so many steps in Y2K preparedness. But just one or two sentences from her and the way that she said it, oh, I can't believe people are still spouting that. We're completely ready. You know, we're just testing it out now. It's all done. And boy,
that's almost as good as McCartney here.
One big step back. And I was like, oh, really? You're done? Gee, well, why am I selling my business and moving into the woods, you know? Gee, And so I think that's another reason we need more support, and we need to get together with people who know about this stuff, and I don't know anybody else who's preparing even.
Well, there's a very active, thank you, chat group, of course, in Seattle, as I'm sure you're aware. I don't know. Look, nothing may happen. You've got to include that in your range of possibilities, that nothing will happen. That Y2K will be, for those who said it was going to be serious, a bust. But that'd be a good thing. That'll be a good thing. That's my attitude about it anyway. It'll be a great thing if it's all a bust. And if people prepared, well, so what? Then they're prepared. And so if something happens, which inevitably it does, we're reading it in the news every day about people without power, people in floods, people in all kinds of trouble, they're ready. Or worst case, they eat their investment or whatever. Maybe nothing will happen, and that would be the best of the extremes. Wouldn't it? I don't know if I believe that, but it would be. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. You're on the air. This is it.
Hi. This is Jenny, and I'm calling from Rochester, Washington.
Hi, Jenny.
And I actually had a comment to make about reincarnation.
Okay.
Am I actually speaking to... Who am I speaking to?
Well, if you were to guess, what would you think?
Okay, I'm going to guess Art Bell.
Ta-da!
Okay, sorry
that
about that.
That lady, the brass ring, yes.
Your voice just sounds so different on the telephone than it does on my radio.
You know, I've really got to do something about that. I've got to figure out a way to make my voice sound on the phone the way it does on the radio so people will believe me. That's a worthy project.
Okay, well, I think what it is that out here in the country, and I've got one of the CC radios, by the way, from your recommendation.
Is it cool or what?
It's very cool, except that I pick you up on about three different stations.
Right.
And each one, depending on how the weather is outside,
right,
is a little bit scratchy. Sometimes you come in clear as a bell. But other than that,
that's the nature of nighttime radio. But what the CC radio lets you do is hear so many more of them, so much better than you would hear them otherwise.
Absolutely, absolutely. I was listening to you on a station in Reno earlier.
That's KOH, 780 KOH.
Right, right. In fact, I think that's what I was just listening to.
Uh-huh.
But the comment that I wanted to make about reincarnation, I've been working with death transformation for a number of years, assisting spirits on, if you will. But back to the lady that called earlier about her grandchild.
Yes.
When my daughter, who is now 25, mm-hmm. when she was 3 years old, one day she suddenly looked at me and said, "Gee, Mommy, I remember when I used to be a big blonde woman and I liked to drink beer."
You're kidding.
No, and I looked at her and I said, "Really?"
Wait a minute. This was a three-year-old?
At three.
A three-year-old,
right? So I looked at her, and I've always been a very curious person, and I said, "Really? And you like to drink beer?" And she said, "Yes." And she said, "And my husband didn't care for it very much because sometimes I would get up on the tables and dance." And I said, "You get up on the tables and dance?"
You've got to be kidding.
And she said, "We had a pub."
We had a what?
We had a pub.
A pub?
She didn't call it a bar. She didn't call it a tavern.
Yeah?
She called it a pub.
Oh, you must have been completely freaked out.
Well, I just looked at her, and I said, "You are truly my 40-year-old midget." You know? And she looked at me, and she just laughed.
Her name wasn't Brandy, was it?
No, Beverly. Beverly is her name.
But it's with a B.
It's with a B.
Synchronicity, it's unbelievable. Hey, yes. Can you stay right there?
Absolutely. Hold on.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 10th, 1999.
At the time away, and talk about their homes. And there's a girl in this harbor town, and she works laying whiskey down. They say, "Brandy, catch another round." She serves them whiskey and wine. They say, "Brandy,
you
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 10th, 1999.
Maybe reincarnation is kind of like a chain that can't be broken. Anyway, top of the morning to you. I've got a young lady on hold, and here she is.
Hello, Art.
Hello again.
Jenny again.
Yes.
Okay. I do believe that reincarnation is a chain. I don't know that I fully agree with your guest tonight.
I don't know if I do either.
I think he had a lot of viable things to say, but there were some things that he left kind of unexplained.
Well, the one thing he did say that blew me away was the explanation of the tape loop ghost.
Yes.
No one's ever given me that before.
Okay, now that I can buy.
Yeah.
But there were some other things that he didn't fully cover for me. Number one, what about all of the people that see their deceased loved ones or friends that actually appear to them or talk to them?
It's never happened to me, has it to you?
I have actually seen, I saw things when I was a child, and I have actually seen discarnate spirits, entities, yes.
That's really interesting.
But not personally anyone that...
that you recognize.
Well, I take that back. I did see my brother.
Oh, that's really interesting. Thank you. I didn't see. I felt the presence of my cat. You know, I've loved cats all my life, and I had a cat named Yesu who died. In my arms, it was so sad. Anyway, I have felt the presence of Yesu, but, you know, I have to imagine the possibility that Yesu was an artifact, or is an artifact of my mind, that Yesu indeed lives on in the sense that he lives on in my mind, in my memory, and that I'm projecting that fact and wanting to keep Yesu alive in that manner, consciously or subconsciously, probably. So you can't rule that out. Well, here I am, surprised again, or not so surprised. A doctor, a friend of mine, writes, Discovery Channel Art, or one of the Time Life channels, did a special, Cocaine Mummies. Fascinating. So it's true. They've tested and found cocaine in mummies. Now, maybe when you die, your body no longer processes the cocaine, so it remains to be tested. Yes, that could certainly be. Little nose crust or something, who knows? I don't know how they would do that testing, but my God, cocaine in mummies. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Art Bell, I talked to you about your website. Checked in.
Okay, what about it?
Well, like Dina's ghost photos?
Yes. Well, I've got many. Which ones?
I think her name was Dina.
Oh, Dinah, yes.
Dinah.
Yes.
Yeah, they look like a hair that was in a circle or something, on the, like a processing error or something. But I don't see the eyes and the teeth that you...
You're looking at the wrong thing.
The photo, I was looking at the actual photo.
No, you're looking at the wrong, but you're looking at the wrong part of the photo. What you should be doing is looking up on the original 35mm, look up toward the ceiling.
Yeah, it's up in the corner.
And then, that's right, and then in the enlargement, I don't have a real hard time seeing features that look an awful lot like eyes. And
yeah,
looks horrible.
I found most stuff on your website interesting. It's just like some of the chupacabra things look like, you know, the dog carcasses that have been dried up.
Might be. Only thing about them, though?
Yeah.
The teeth aren't right.
No. Well, that could be a canine.
No, they don't look right for canine teeth. They look, too big, and in a lot of cases, you know, the specific teeth that are sticking out look closer to something in Alien. Remember with Sigourney Weaver? Almost like that. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Yes, this is Kiki in Kissimmee, Florida.
Welcome. Where in Florida?
Kissimmee.
Kissimmee?
It's right outside of Disney.
Okay, I know where you are.
Where the Mickey Mouse is.
Yes, indeed.
I just wanted to tell you that you have given me a lot of nightless sleeping nights.
Well, I don't know if that's good or bad.
But it's wonderful. You are so informative, and I can't thank you enough for all of that.
You remember when I was talking a little while ago to somebody, and I said, be a man, tell her to leave the room, you're going to listen to Art Bell. Remember that? I got a fax here. It says, shame on you, Artie, because you're stealing husbands from their wives at night. Poor, lonely wives laying all alone in tears because you broadcast. She goes on, well, it's okay. The wives can still be abducted by aliens and get their business done that way.
Not this wife. Boy, I want to stay here. I'll tell you what. I was in show business all my life, and I traveled all my life, my mother and father and I together. And I'll make this quick. One night I was on my own after my father passed away and my mother, and I was doing an act by myself, and I traveled all night driving like a son of a gun to get to the next date. And I got in this hotel room and lie in bed, and the next door they were having a party, and I was having such a time sleeping. So I thought, oh, gosh, I've got to get to sleep. I've got to get to sleep. Finally, I dozed off, and then this bright light came in my face, bright, bright light. And I got up and looked, and it was Christ standing there with my father standing behind him, waving at me to come with him. And I sat up in bed, and I thought, oh, my God, this can't be true. And so I got out of bed, washed my face real good, got back in bed and looked, and he was still there.
Sounds like Meet Joe Black to me.
I'll tell you, it was scary, but I know one thing, that ever since that time, I have never had a problem going to sleep. Ever since, except for Art Bell, of course.
Well, that's quite a story. Thank you, West of the Rockies. You're on the air.
Hello, Art. This is Barry from Windsor, California, listening to KSRO over here.
Yes, sir.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm fine.
Prayers are with Richard Hogan. I had the pleasure of talking to him on your show one night, and I sure hope he gets better.
Yes, sir.
Something about Egypt and Atlantis. You know, all the mummies, or most of them, have tested positive for cocaine and tobacco.
You lie.
No, it's a fact.
Now, tobacco I could understand, but... No, wait a minute. How do you possibly test a mummy for cocaine?
They drug tested the mummies.
No, I know, but I mean, even in a living human body, there would not be cocaine detectable after about, I'm told, about 30 days. So well, how in...
The lady that come up with the test evidence, I wish I could remember her
how
name.
In the name of Osiris would you get a positive test after thousands of years?
Well, I'm not a chemist. I couldn't tell you that. But it was, I can't remember which source I heard it from.
Maybe that's why they had to tape up their nose like that.
Could be. But the fact that they had two things, tobacco and cocaine, which are native to
yes.
the American continent, correct? And it was tested, I guess, enough mummies were tested to where it was over a large span of time. That would be proof of trade with somebody who had access to Americas. Kind of like proof of Atlantis, almost.
Or at least Columbia.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Hey, doing some pretty good business. You don't know how far back that goes.
Apparently not. Thank you. Mummies testing positive for cocaine, huh? Well, like I say, maybe that's why they tape the nose that way. Well, folks, guess what? Another machine that I own is dying. Its life support system beginning to flicker. My television is dying. It hasn't died yet, quite, but I know the signs. You begin to get these red scan lines, you know, these little red scan lines across the screen. And you, people who have a pinkish tint to their skin suddenly get kind of greenish, then it goes back to pinkish. The tube is dying. Sad. This one has lasted about 7 years, so I am going to splurge. I don't splurge very often, but I am going to splurge, and I am going to buy a brand new Sony. I'm going to get the new Sony HDTV. It's long, you know, like Letterbox. I'm such a movie fan, I really am such a movie fan, that I ordered the Sony HDTV yesterday. As I looked at my TV in its death throes, its twitching death throes, I have to wait a couple of months for this thing. You can't even get them right now. So I'm praying my TV will not go belly up completely for a couple of months. I've been saying to myself, I've got to have HDTV, HDTV. I've just got to have it. Even though it's not exactly out there yet, I can't hold back any longer. So I'm dying to see it. It's the only one they have, the Sony, and it's a long TV, you know, long. Not even really broadcasting much HDTV yet, but I couldn't stop myself. No point in getting an old one now, a new old one, if you will. International Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art. I'm just phoning to tell you how they tested those mummies. It was hair.
The hair?
They tested the hair. The hair can...
Oh, that's right. The hair. The hair. Of course the hair.
Hair holds chemicals and whatever long past your death, just like fingernails and toenails, too.
Well, I wonder if they were able to determine that cocaine was in use at the time of death, or very near the time of death.
Well, I watched the special, and I think it was also in National Geographic, too. And apparently this was... It wasn't smoked or snorted, it was chewed and ingested.
Ah.
That was how it stayed in the system. So
then ceremonial, perhaps.
Perhaps.
That would make sense.
Yeah. So, just for your information.
But you'd kind of...
By the way, Art.
Yes?
I prayed for Richard last night, and I sure hope that he gets better. He's one of my heroes. The man has so much courage and so much integrity. I sure hope that he pulls through this, because God knows who else will carry on his work.
You're right about that. Courage and integrity. Richard has a very great deal of both. He's kind of childlike. Richard will never grow up. I probably won't either. What does it mean to grow up anyway? You know, get serious and forget about your dreams and forget about the quest and the search. And the thrill of the search? If it means giving up all that, then who wants to grow up anyway? But there are a lot of people who just, you know, sort of don't all the way grow up, and that's Richard. But ethical and moral and very honest, all of those traits are Richard. To the point where he sacrifices himself, and the Miami Circle business is a really good example of that. He worked himself to death on that thing. And talk about vindication. The Miami Circle has just been carbon dated to be a minimum of 2,000 years old, and they think older now. And as I pointed out to you yesterday, now the state legislature in Florida has voted $15 million. So the Circle is indeed safe. But do you know how close that was? It was that close. It was that close. And we would never have known unless we had purchased, at great expense, time to do the testing. We would never have known. And we would have put the bulldozers to something that at a bare minimum was here when Christ walked on the earth. In our country. Not in Israel. Or Egypt, where you might expect to see things of this age, but our country, where you don't. That close, we were that close, we never would have known. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Don calling from Chandler, Arizona.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I have a suggestion for some bumper music for you.
Okay.
Styx, Grand Illusion.
That'd be good.
Okay, and another thing I wanted to say, I'm 39. And I wanted to say, God help my generation and the ones after me.
I know, but every generation says that.
Yeah, I know. I thought
just like that. It's like you say you're 39.
I'm starting to sound like my dad, but
you are
it's
becoming
true this time.
You're becoming your dad,
but it's true this time.
Well, when you listen to today's non-music noise,
oh yeah.
What do you say to yourself? You say, oh, my God, what a bunch of crap. Who could listen to this? There's no melody.
Most of it is.
There's no song. There's nothing. It's just a thumping, stupid beat that doesn't make any sense at all, right?
And you can't even hear the lyrics.
Yeah, but you know what? My dad used to say that about Paul Anka.
Yeah, mine did, too. Okay, take care of yourself, Art.
See you later.
And God bless.
All right, see you later. All the early Paul Anka and Elvis Presley and all that stuff. So my dad said, my God, you call that music? You know, so we are our father's Oldsmobile, mostly. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Hi, Art. This is Dan calling from Tucson.
Yes, sir.
And I just had a quick observation and then a quick question.
All right, observe.
Well, you know, now we got this information about the Egyptians and the cocaine. I guess that solves how the pyramids were built. You know, if you have 1,000 people hopped up on cocaine.
You get right on that rock.
But I sent you an email, but I didn't know about the father, Malachi Martin. You said he had a heart attack or was having a problem?
He had a stroke, sir.
Okay.
And he lost some use of his right side. He's recovering. They are, but the last I've heard, he's continuing to recover. His website is down. Don't let that worry you. He continues to recover, and they're watching him like a hawk. They won't let anybody near him, and they sure as hell won't let anybody interview him, and I understand that. So he's recovering, and with the help of God, we'll have him on the air again.
Okay, because I was wanting to ask, when I was in the Air Force, I was stationed over in England, and I believe it was in 1990, it was October 31st, Halloween night.
Yes.
And they interviewed this Catholic priest who said he was a vampire hunter. And for like 2 hours, they talked with this guy.
Yeah, I would like to talk to that fellow. I think I've got something in a pile of paperwork on him, but it only vaguely comes to mind. So I think I've got something. I would really like to interview that fellow myself. The Catholic Church is sort of in denial about what he's saying.
Right.
They've actually come back and said that, but he claims to be a vampire hunter. That's right.
Yeah, and so I thought I didn't know if Father Malachi knew of him or what the situation was, but yeah, I just thought I'd pass that along. And also, I was going to ask for a potential guest some night. How about Stan Lee?
No, I don't know Stan Lee, so you'll have to send me something on him.
Well, he's the producer of Marvel Comics, created like Spider-Man and just about all the comic book characters, you know.
Oh, that'd be fun.
So,
all right. All right, thank you very much. The only thing I wonder is a vampire hunter. Let's think about that a little bit. A vampire hunter. If a priest found what he considered to be a vampire and did the traditional stake through the heart business, and the cops came, and the priest is there, and he's telling them why he drove a stake through this guy's heart. In this modern day and age, there would be a problem, wouldn't there? There'd be a trial. Anyway, he sounds like he'd be an interesting interview. That's it for tonight. Clock says we gotta go. Clock never lies. People tell lies, not clocks. That's it. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. Night all.